This morning, I would like for us to be spending most of our time in the 40th chapter of Isaiah. Okay? It's a chapter that magnifies the Lord. Getting into that, every now and then, there are passages of Scripture that kind of hit me in a way that requires me to think about it and think about the application and how does it work for me and for you. We have a small group of guys who meet together on Wednesday morning. It ranges in size from, well, I think the smallest group has been 4, I think, and sometimes as many as 9. And we rush through passages of Scripture. The Gospel of John took us only 3 years. We finished it. We're now in the small, short letter written to James. We're 3 weeks into it. We're all the way to verse 8 of chapter 1. Back to the Gospel of John. There was something there that captivated me. And you fellows who are with us on Wednesday morning, this is not new stuff to you. There was a conversation that culminates in the 16th chapter of John. But what is being referred to begins at least in chapter 14. Jesus has announced to his disciples he's not going to be around indefinitely. He is moving on. He's going somewhere else. And he says, you can't come with me now. But the day will come when you can come with me. Disciples are listening. I think in my mind, I picture them scratching their heads. Jesus moves along with his teaching time. And finally, the disciples say, look, you were speaking in a fashion, it doesn't really make sense. And come back to that particular incident where he says, I'm going to go away. It's kind of like, goodbye, you can't come with me. Oh, but you will come with me later. And they say, what are you talking about? And at least one of the disciples, he's brave, I guess, he says, you know, you're speaking in riddles. It doesn't make sense to us. So Jesus takes about 2 verses. He explains a little more. And the reaction is, now you're speaking plainly. No metaphors, no riddles. Got it. We understand what you're saying. And Jesus says, okay, now you understand. Do you believe it? And that's the key issue. Do you believe what you say you understand? There are lots of people who understand, but they don't believe. I've told you this story, I think. A gentleman named Walter Kaiser. Walter Kaiser, in our theological framework, has written a half a dozen books on how to interpret the Scriptures. Teaches at the seminary level. And he went to a summer class at Johns Hopkins University that was taught by a Jewish rabbi on the book of Romans. Surprise, huh? Yeah. Kaiser says, I have never heard anybody give a more explicit and accurate interpretation of what Paul is saying in Romans than that man. A student raises his hand and says, Dr. Kaiser, You sound like you might be a Messianic Jew. Do you believe? I'm sorry, what? Walter Kaiser. Walter Kaiser is who I'm talking about. You're right. Okay. Thank you. Thank you. So, the student says, Rabbi, you sound like you believe what you're teaching. And the rabbi's reply was, no, I'm just telling you what Paul is saying. He believed it. I don't believe it. It's very possible for us to understand what is being said without believing it. Believing is the key. What's our focus this morning? I want our focus coming out of Isaiah, but other passages also. It has to do with just who is this God. Very succinctly, in the book of Micah, in the Old Testament again, we find these words. What does the Lord require of you? But to do justice, to love kindness, and walk humbly with your God. Later, the author of Hebrews in the New Testament says, without faith it's impossible to please him, for he who comes to God must what? Believe that he is. Must believe that he is. That's Micah 5:8 was the first one. Hebrews 11, I think it's verse 6, is the second one. Folks, the question for us is, what do we believe? Do you believe that there is a God? If you believe there is a God, what's he like? If you don't believe there is a God, everything else is irrelevant. It doesn't make any difference. Most of us in this room will say, yes, we believe there is a God. If we believe, there is action that must follow. Believe is an action word. To understand does not require action. I can think it with my head, say, okay, I got what you're saying. I think it's balderdash, but I understand what you're saying. But if I believe what you're saying, it has to have an effect on me and the way I behave, the way I relate to you, the way I relate to the world. And David, coming off Sunday school class, I must believe something about the world, the flesh, and the devil. It's all a package. I would like for you, if not already, turn to Isaiah chapter 40. I think in this passage, we have a very provocative, a pregnant description of who this person is that we call God. Some characteristics about him. And if we believe this stuff, it's going to affect the way that we relate to each other, the way we relate to the world around us, the way that we relate to ourselves. All I want to do this morning is to kind of march through some of the things that are said in Isaiah 40, give you a handle to think about what it is I believe. Now, in Isaiah, historically, these were tough times for all of the people of Israel. The Assyrians have invaded the country. And people, if you don't know how the Assyrians treated those that they subjugated, the Nazis had nothing on them. They may have invented the cruelty to prisoners, flaying the flesh while the victim is still alive, peeling their flesh off. Not good times. The 40th chapter of Isaiah begins with comfort. Comfort, my people, says your God. Buried in this word of comfort is the idea of taking a deep breath. Breathe easily and comfortably. That's what God has for them in the midst of the invasion by the Assyrians. Comfort. Comfort my people. Speak kindly to Jerusalem. Call out to her and her warfare, that her warfare has ended, that her iniquity has been removed, that she has received of the Lord's hand double for all of her sins. You have paid for what you have done in the past. It's over. Time to relax. Take a deep breath and let's move forward. Verse 3, a voice is calling. Clear the way for the Lord in the wilderness. Make smooth in the desert a highway for our God. Let every valley be lifted up. Every mountain and hill be made low, level it out. And let the rough ground become a plain, the rugged terrain a broad valley, and the glory of the Lord will be revealed. Do you remember what glory is? Glory is that stuff that points to something else, not itself. Glory, in this kind of a context, is saying, look for God's signs. Look for his footprints. Look for where his finger is pointing. The glory of the Lord is that which points to him and who he is. Verse 5, and all flesh will see it together. The mouth of the Lord has spoken. People, by this time, I certainly hope that you recognize when the mouth of the Lord speaks, it's said and done. That's his seal that says, don't doubt. I've said it. It's gonna happen. Okay. Verse 6, a voice says, call out. And then he answered, what shall I call out? Call out this. All flesh is grass. All its loveliness is like the flower of the field. The grass withers. The flower fades. When the breath of the Lord blows upon it, and it fades away. Surely, the people are grass. Those Assyrian armies, I can blow on them and they disappear. Do you remember your biblical history? What happened way back in the book of Chronicles with the Assyrians? Sennacherib is the king. They've invaded Israel. There's an army of how many people? How many soldiers? My memory says something like 280,000. They've laid siege to Jerusalem. And God says, enough is enough. The time has come. And the Assyrian army is leveled. 280,000 soldiers down. And within a day or two, the Assyrian army withdrew and went back to Babylon. The grass withers, the flower fades, when the breath of the Lord blows upon it. Surely the people are grass. The grass withers, the flower fades. But, what's the but? The word of our God stands forever. Now, are we prepared to listen to what Isaiah is saying about God? And then are we willing to think about its implications for us and to believe it? Because if we do, there's going to be a change for every one of us here as we focus on the God we say we believe. We'll not be the same people. In verse 9, get yourself up on a high mountain. O Zion, another name for Jerusalem, bearer of good news, lift up your voice mightily. O Jerusalem, bearer of good news. What is he saying there? The people in the city that has been under siege, they are now given a responsibility. Jerusalem, bearer of good news, lift it up. Do not fear. Say to the cities of Judah, here is your God. Your King James Version, some of you have it, and the Hebrew translation by the Jewish people, at this point, in the phrase that follows, I think they toughen it up. It isn't just, here is your God. It's, behold! There's an emphasis, a critical nature here. Look! This is your God we're talking about. Here, behold, is your God. And then we get into the running description of what's going on. In verse 10, behold, the Lord God will come with might, with his arm ruling for him. And behold, his reward is with him, and his recompense before him. It's preparing for the description of what is ahead, what is coming. What is his future for you? He is coming with might, power, strength. And what is he going to do with it? It says he's going to rule. He's going to be top dog. And when he says something's going to happen, it's going to happen. You want to be his people? Listen to him. What does he have to say? He's coming both to rule and to reward. We could chase that, but let's not. In verse 11, like a shepherd, he will tend his flock. In his arm, he will gather the lambs and carry them in his bosom, and he will gently lead the nursing ewes. He has a faithful purpose, people. When he says he's going to do something, it's more than simply predictive of something that's going to occur in the future. He's putting himself on the line. He said, I'm telling you, this is what's going to occur. And he's the one who can make sure it does occur. So when he says, I'm going to do this, listen up. It's going to happen. Consider his faithful purpose. He gives us the image of the shepherd and his flock. We are the sheep. He's the shepherd. The shepherd is commissioned to look after the sheep. He says, I'm going to look after you. We don't live in that kind of an agrarian society. And I've asked myself from time to time, what is the image that I would use to try to communicate that today? It's something for us to think about. We can learn about those cultures back then, and I think that we can imagine something about what it is that's being conveyed. God is faithful. Again, God's going to do what he says he'll do. And he says, if I'm going to look after you, if I say I'm going to, then believe it. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to watch over you. I'm going to protect you. Okay. Verses 12 to 17. Who has measured the waters in the hollow of his hand? Who has marked off the heavens by the span? Who has calculated the dust of the earth by the measure? And who has weighed the mountains in a balance and the hills in a pair of scales? Can you imagine the picture he is painting? He's saying, these are the things that I have done already. In verse 13, who has directed the Spirit of the Lord? Or as his counselor has informed him. What he is saying is, people, where were you when creation occurred? Where were you? Were you standing back behind my shoulder, whispering in my ear so I'd get it right? Were you my counselor? Who has measured the waters in the hollow of his hand? He's talking about the oceans. Every drop of water that there ever has been in the palm of his hand. He's marked off the heavens by the span. What's a span? You know what that is? Take your hand. My fingers don't bend the way they used to. End of the thumb to the end of a little finger. That's the span. I've measured off all of the heavens by the span of my hand. You know, there comes a time when numbers mean virtually nothing. They are so huge. I have nothing to compare them to. What's a light year? You can do the math. Maybe, Armin, you have it at the tip of your memory. Maybe you do. What's a light year? It's how far light will travel at the end of a year's time. And how fast is that? How many miles? Per second? Yeah. Dave Barry, a humorist, columnist in national newspaper syndication, would say something like, you know how many that is? A lot. What do you do with those numbers? Take the 296,000 miles per second. Measure it by 1 minute. Then I said, measure, multiply it. And then what do we do with an hour? We take that figure that was the result, multiply it by another 60, because there are 60 minutes in an hour. And now we have, I don't know how many zeros are hung out there. And then we have to take that and multiply it by 24 hours a day. Take that number and multiply it by at least 365 days a year. And every now and then we do a hiccup, throw in an extra day. That's the God we're dealing with. And I'm going to tell him what to do and how to behave. Okay, there are things here that we need to skip over just because it's a matter of piling more of the same kinds of information on the same illustration in order to amplify just how big our God is. So we need to consider the act of creation when we look at Him, understand the scope of creation, compare the individual intelligence to that of the creator of the universe. Advice for most of us is we can learn by committee. That is, let's get together. We'll get the best brains in all of the world to focus on a particular issue. And we have a better chance of being right and getting somewhere. God is saying He's superior to all of that collective wisdom in the entirety of creation. J.B. Phillips, an Anglican, I guess, priest, rector, whatever they would call them those days, back in the 1950s, wow, 60, 70 years ago, he wrote a relatively small book entitled, Your God is Too Small. Your God is Too Small. Why would he do that? Part of it is because we are so limited in our comprehension of what God has done, of who He is. We can't really imagine. I'm using language that is inadequate. His immensity, His intelligence, His actions. I can't think large enough. Let me move on to verse 18. Three verses here. To whom then will you liken God? Or what likeness will you compare with Him? Oh my. The next verse. People, you want to feel humility. Read the following chapters up to about chapter 46. As Isaiah amplifies the illustration he is making. As for the idol, a craftsman casts it. A goldsmith plates it with gold. A silversmith fashions chains of silver. And he who is too impoverished for such an offering selects a tree that does not rot. Pretty hard wood. He seeks out for himself a skilled craftsman to prepare an idol that will not totter. And later, just a few chapters later, we get a more detailed picture of the illustration he is making. And it will run quickly, something like this. We go out in the forest. We find this tree. We chop the tree down. We have chips going all over. And then we get that skilled craftsman comes along, and he, with his axe and a knife, he begins to whittle away at it. So pretty soon there is an image that appears. Then he stabilizes it so it doesn't tip, it doesn't totter. He takes it home. With the chips, he saves those because they're good for burning your fire and cooking your dinner and things like that. And he sets up this figure that's been created. And then he bows down and he says, "My God." And he worships this thing that he has created with his own hands and says, "That's God." In essence, what is he saying? In essence, he is saying, "I am God. What is here is a product of my hands." So, a question I think for all of us is, what kinds of things do we substitute for the God of the Bible? We all have a God. The God is that which drives us. The God is that which I will sacrifice to obtain, to attend, to give my devotion to, and it can be another person, it can be an object, it can be my employment, it can be, boy, it just expands all over. But it is not the God of the Bible. Verses 21 to 26. "Do you not know? Have you not heard? Has it not been declared to you from the beginning? Have you not understood from the foundation of the world? It is He who sits above the circle of the earth, and its inhabitants are like grasshoppers, who stretches out the heaven like a curtain and spreads them out like a tent to dwell in." What's he talking about? Those very things that he measures with the span of his hand, from his thumb to his little finger. Verse 23, "He it is who reduces rulers to nothing." The woof to the armies of Sennacherib and the Assyrians, and instantly 280,000 die. That's historical. "Who makes the judges of the earth meaningless. Scarcely have they been planted. Scarcely have they been sown. Scarcely has their stock taken root in the earth. But he merely blows on them and they wither. The storm carries them away like stubble. To whom then will you liken me? That I would be his equal, says the Holy One. Lift up your eyes on high. See who has created these stars, the one who leads forth their host by number. He calls them all by name because of the greatness of his might and the strength of his power. Not one of them is missing. They don't get lost." How many stars are there? Nobody knows. It seems as though every time we develop a new telescope that will look further or bring clarity, greater clarity to the skies, we get a new number, and it's always larger than the last number. Who is our God? Verse 27. "Why do you say, O Jacob, and assert, O Israel, my way is hidden My way is hidden from Jehovah Yahweh. And the justice due me escapes the notice of my God. I'm capable of hiding from him. Do you not know? Have you not heard? The everlasting God, the Lord, the creator of the ends of the earth. He doesn't become weary or tired. He doesn't wear out. He doesn't need a breather. He doesn't need the oxygen tank. His understanding is inscrutable. It's beyond comprehension or searching or trying to figure out. It's inscrutable. Now, wrapping up the chapter, from all of this language that deals with comparing the God of creation, the one the Jewish people called Yahweh, comparing him to anything else that might be addressed as God. This God, he gives strength to the weary. To him who lacks might, he increases power. Though youths grow weary and tired, and vigorous young men stumble badly, yet those who wait for the Lord, Yahweh, they will gain new strength. They will mount up with wings like eagles. They will run and not get weary. They won't get tired. They'll walk and not become weary. You ever get tired of life? Sometimes we do become very tired. We would like for this to end. And I would venture to say that if we follow through, we're not believing the God who has redeemed us and made us his own. We're not only not understanding, we're not believing. The believing requires an action. Understanding does not. So, what do I do with this? The opening verses of James' letter. What does he say about trials? I'm sorry, say it louder.
You will have trials.
You will have trials. And what are we to do with trials? What kind of trials is he talking about? I'm going to suggest to you, he is not talking about which automobile should I buy. He's not talking about the kid who has not studied for a test and asked God for wisdom. I'm not saying we ought not to pray for those things. We may, but that's not what he's talking about. He's talking about the sort of thing that comes into my life where I say, is it worth it? Is believing worth it? This is life and death stuff, people. James says, count it all joy. Why would he do that? Because the end result is, if you believe what is taught, then you will recognize God has a plan. And he is going to accomplish his plan. And you and I are not going to thwart that plan. How do we react when a child is stillborn? I don't know this, But I would not be surprised if some of you folks, I'd be surprised if you have not, if someone has not experienced that. What do you do when a husband or wife walks out and says, I want nothing more to do with you? What about the untimely death of the child or the husband? I'm not ready for them to go. What do we do when we are falsely accused of some wrong? We know we're innocent, and it cannot be proven. Our reputation can be ruined. Those people that we considered friends, they see us coming in the shopping market at the other end of the aisle. They see us and they turn around and walk the other direction. Humiliation. What will carry us through? People, if we don't have a firm grip on who this God is, it can be more than we want to bear, more than we can bear. We must come to the place where we are willing to trust God for who he says he is. The end result will be more strength. Our tiredness and our weariness can evaporate. Don't expect it overnight. Some of you, I've shared some more personal issues from my own life. I'm not going to detail those. I have been falsely accused. I have lost a daughter to death. Children are not supposed to die before their parents. That's out of order. But it happens. How do we bear up under that? People, all I can do is point you to the one who says, look at me. Behold. Behold your God. This is what he's like. And I would encourage you, read and reread Isaiah chapter 40. Think about what he is saying. And ask yourself. At this point, you understand what he's saying, but do you believe it? Are you willing to lay down your life in front of him and say, my God, my God. Father, our desire is that you would take your word, do whatever this magic thing is when you come in and you prompt us and you take away the clouds of misunderstanding or lack of understanding. You help us to see what life is really about. Give us the kind of a heart where we can say, yes, God. It hurts. It's painful. But I trust you to bring good out of it in the end. I want to stop right there and ask you questions or comments that you might have about what we've heard. Leah?
You know, I've been doing a lot of flying lately, and it's kind of made me start thinking as I'm looking down and watching how tiny, how teeny tiny we are, really, from way up there. And to think that even though we're like microscopic, we don't really realize, you know, because everything's relative. We're in this part of the world. But to put it in a different perspective for me, to think how so tiny we are, and yet we're so close to God that He came to be one of us.
I think that is awesome. It's awesome. Armin.
One of the things that has been so...
You sure you speak loudly so all of us...
One of the things that has been so overwhelming for me in the last year is that this God that Isaiah describes there, He not only... Jesus not only says, gives permission that we can call this God Father, but He actually tells us to do it. God is our Father.
I'm with you. Someone else? Yes, Billy.
I have a card on my refrigerator. It says, life is not always the way it's supposed to be. It's the way you deal with it that makes a difference. And I truly believe that with everything that I've gone through in my life. And I thank God that it turned out the way it did. That's true. He is a pain, but He's a good pain.
Good. Someone else.
I was at your house yesterday, and your wife has this thing on the wall. There is always, always, always something to be thankful for. And here's this God that we've just barely touched upon. You can't even think of God as enormous. Always has been, always will be. He's here, He's there, He's everywhere. And yet, this is the one, just like Leanna said, that we have the right to be His child. And we can thank Him no matter what.
And Armin has reminded us we can call Him Daddy.
I know, and He wants us to.
Okay. Father, help us to leave this room. Help us to be changed people. Help us. Give us eyes to see, minds to understand, and hearts to accept and to act. Father, as we leave here, we would ask You to keep us safe on our road. Give us the comfort that we need as we continue to walk through this life. Give us the wisdom that we need to make decisions properly, recognizing that there truly is a goal. Help us to face into the uncertainties of life, but to cling to You as our one certainty. I ask this not having the faintest idea what You might bring. You might bring us through or to, but deepen that faith that we would have in You and Your wisdom, Your plan. I don't know what else to do but to just ask You to accept our ability, our right to even approach You because of Your Son, Jesus. Amen.